Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand.
Hearing Jerry Howarth in my ear. There's some crossover here. I'm not sure where we are. The baseball game is on the TV side, and we are on. If we get that out of my ear, it would be great. Yes, there it is. Beautiful. Brad Fay along with Gord Stellick and Scott Morrison. It's Hockey Central at Noon Awards Edition. Speaking of awards, I just want to give credit where credit's due, because how many times this happened? I say, or used to anyway, I try to keep as many of the preseason guides in each sport, at least the main ones. It's fun to look back years later and see. Hockey news. I don't even know if we're on TV, but I'll show it anyway. The prediction, Chicago over Tampa Bay. This was the preseason magazine. A few things they got wrong, as everybody would, but to have the champion over the finalists is pretty rare. I was going to look maybe one day later this week, since we don't have a whole lot to talk about. Well, we might. We'll look through the top 50 players and see how
that
all...
Way to promo the show.
How that unfolded. No, this is so... Well, no, I'm promoing it, saying we're going to break down the top 50 players and see how they did with that.
Okay. Show about nothing.
Number one player in the National Hockey League this year, no question, I think it'll be recognized tonight, is Carey Price. And we haven't seen, we've seen goaltenders in recent history now. It used to be the, Jock Plante one, and then we had a long time without MVP. Now we see one every 5 or 6 years get considered, but not many guys have had years like Carey Price.
Well, and it was Jose Theodore, right? The one
who
time
won the Hart,
and the
because
2002,
because the Montreal voter didn't put Iginla on the ballot, or Iginla would have didn't even put him in the top 10, and that was kind of anyway.
So I mean that was the one that kind of that was kind of the fly in the ointment, and you know there is always that argument about same in baseball, they have the Cy Young Award for pitchers and the MVP for non pitchers. And here, the goaltenders have an award, actually two awards now, that they can win. But I got to say, I don't know the last time there was a season, and it is most valuable to his team. That's always the caveat with the Hart Trophy. It's not the most valuable player. It's the most valuable to his team. So probably every year you could be arguing for goaltenders. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist could have been in the argument at different times, but I've rarely seen a year, certainly modern days, like Carey Price had for the Montreal Canadiens. And And maybe because nobody else jumped up with a, Wayne Gretzky type year or whatever it may be, that I think he'll be going up quite a few times.
Well, keep in mind, too, a defenseman can win the Norris and the Hart Trophy. So why can't a goalie win?
Yeah, but, how often does a defenseman win the Hart?
I'd have to.
Pronger. But I mean, Bobby Orr.
But goaltenders win it more goaltenders win it more than defensemen do. But you're right.
I just think that I agree with you, Gord, that, goalies are important all the time, and we've seen great performances all the time, but this one was just a notch above. And Lundqvist left the Rangers via injury. Talbot came in. The Rangers didn't miss a beat, and that's not taking anything away from Lundqvist. And even Rene went down in Nashville, and they still rolled along without him until the end of the season. So we saw some guys leave that were great during the season, and their teams were still very good. I'm not sure Montreal would have survived if Carey Price had gone down. And that's not taking anything away from the backup. He was just that good. And you think of the number of times he kept that team in for comeback wins and the number of times they gave up first goals, but he shut the door, and that his numbers were just so outstanding. I just think he was a notch above a normal performance.
I almost thought for a while it would be two goaltenders. And of all things, as you talk about the Edmonton Oilers looking for a goaltender, that their ex-goaltender,
Evan Dubnyk,
might have been another guy there, just because it was a phenomenal run that went on at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, I voted, and you put five names in, and two of them were goalies, Price and Dubnyk.
And Dubnyk, who else was on your ballot, Scott?
I had... let me just get my list up here. It's
been Price so was obviously, do you do it in order, Price, or just put five?
You put them in order, So I had Price, Ovechkin, Tavares, Dubnyk, and Getzlaff.
Yeah, interesting.
Ever since the FIFA thing, he's very careful about the voting. Yeah, making sure there's no money exchange.
Last day of the season, check the bank balance the next day and see who got the vote. The awards have changed a lot, and everything's come this way now where, there's nominees and they show up and do it. It used to be kind of, you remember the old hockey cards? You get the hockey card, and if the Hart Trophy winner was just being presented on on the ice, more like the NBA does it. Do you like it that way? Would you rather see them come out and present it to the player, you know, if the team's in the playoffs, and do it that way? Do you like this where it's all under one roof and kind of the fun of getting together and having that suspense of the nominees and everything else?
Well, selfishly, I liked it when it was in Toronto or somewhere else, like a real hockey market, yeah. Selfishly.
But I mean during play, like say, well, for example, Carey Price wins and they show up and present it to him like they did in the NBA with Steph Curry and LeBron James in front of the home crowd, first round of the playoffs.
Because, well, then the other team probably thinks that's an unfair thing to do if you're in the playoffs. You know, the league is supposed to be impartial. But I know, you know, going back and again, doing books on, like Scott has done, like the original six time, it was a throwaway luncheon during the final. Right, yeah. It was a throwaway. Mm-hmm. Then the guys would all show up, but it was an off day lunch, and they would do it at. And I do remember the modern day one. I'm trying to remember what they did for a while, but Steve Ryan was the marketing guy, and they went to that Place des Arts or someplace in Montreal on a gorgeous June afternoon during the draft. The only thing that didn't work so well is Rod Langway won the Norris and kind of dumped on the Montreal Canadian management or Irving Grumman and all, you know, whatever. Yeah. So I can't remember when they did before. But the other thing is, I like the idea. But I could see being a visiting team. But then you argue, well, then your guy should win a trophy. Yeah. If your guy won a trophy, we'd present it on your home ice as well. But I think getting the raucous support of the people there, whatever trophy it may be, that'd be a good way to do it, sure.
Yeah, for a number of years, they did it out of CBC in Toronto, or a theater on Yonge Street. And they had the Stanley Cup luncheon where they presented the Masterton Award. That was back in the 80s and the early 90s, and then that disappeared and became a part of the bigger show. But I like it. I mean, I think, you know, the show itself is, it gets panned every year because you're doing a comedy, doing a roast. And
hockey players are so funny by nature.
Exactly, and it's one of those shows where you don't want to be, you know, the essence of comedy is ripping on people.
Yeah, yes.
And they don't want to be ripping on people. So it really impacts some of the jokes that come on the show.
Norm MacDonald hosting the ESPYs.
Yeah, it can get a little bit dry in that regard. But I like the suspense of seeing who's going to win. And it's nice for these guys to be put on that sort of pedestal and given Vegas, their moment.
Vegas makes a difference. I mean, nobody minds going there.
Changed the attendance.
Yes, absolutely. Mitch Marner is going to join us in about 3 minutes' time. So in the meantime, we talk about suspense. The number three pick is where the draft begins, other than no disrespect to the two who know where they're going. But Don Maloney now says he's got a couple of firm offers he may move, and that may affect Mitch Marner. Who knows? He's slated somewhere in that 4 to 6 range, perhaps. You think there'll be fireworks with that third pick right away, or do you think Maloney is, just gut feeling as to what's going on with them in Arizona right now?
Well, at least he's kicking tires, for starters, and kicking tires you quite often do buy the car. So I think definitely they're looking at, and that's why, to me, they've been rather public about taking Dylan Strome, whether they're going to or not, but they made it seem that way. And then the other thing, now you're looking at, I know Edmonton's rumored as one team, Columbus rumored as another team that have made overtures. Really, probably everyone's made an overture in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, you've got a chance to move up and get the number one defenseman. And, you know, recently it's been Seth Jones or Aaron Ekblad or those kind of guys. So I think that you look at it, there's still a real jewel there to do it. And Don Maloney basically saying, yeah, we're open for business.
Yeah.
And that gets everyone excited. That gets owners excited. Like I talked about this before. That gets owners excited in some of the other cities, which is a pain for their general manager. But that's what Don Maloney wants. He wants other organizations to say, wow, we got to really look seriously at that number three pick.
What about Edmonton, Scott? Let's just play that game for fun because there's so much attention around this team and a lot of assets, young assets. What do you think it would take for them to get the number three pick out of Arizona? Would they have to deal one of their first overall picks from the last 5 years?
I would expect that you'd have to include a good young player. And what do they have, the number 16 pick? Yeah.
16. And
so you'd have to throw that into play. I don't know if you have to put 16 and 33 in play with a good young player, how steep the price is. But if you're Edmonton, boy, oh boy, it's probably worth it. I you'd like to use one of those picks to draft a goalie, I think, to have that kind of feed in your organization. But if you're Edmonton and you look at it and say you can get McDavid and then the best defenseman in the draft.
Unreal.
That's an incredible daily double.
Yeah.
Well, or a building block.
Yeah, but, you know, drafting a goalie, it's the guy we just talked about. There's so few Carey Prices, you know, that you just actually are drafted high and have success with the team. I still... You know, that they had a guy that is one of your top five guys. I mean, Devan Dubnyk in a different situation would have been a good goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers. And I still think there's those kind of guys out there that can give you decent goaltending. You don't have to draft high. And also, goaltenders may slide till the second, third round. Anyway,
yeah, what I'm saying. That's 33 may be that pick where you use it on a goalie. But you got to have one in your system that you're developing, I think.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go 16 to draft a goalie, but maybe in that early second round.
Yeah, and with all the names in there, and we talked about this quickly yesterday, Scott, you weren't here, but waiting for that moment when Gary Bettman steps up after getting booed, as I said yesterday, and says, we have a trade. And then all you know what breaks loose. I mean, this is the potential. Maybe nothing happens in the first round, but I don't remember a draft with more potential for big trades with big picks beyond the first two that we know where they're going.
Well, and it just seems that there's a number of bodies. Maybe it's because of all the focus in this city of Kessel and Phaneuf that there's an expectation that one or two big deals could get made leading up to that first
pick. Patrick Sharp in there too, right?
Yeah, exactly, with Chicago faced with their cap challenges. So I don't recall when there's been that sort of level of expectation for a deal because public about it going into it.
You know, when we talked to Mark Spector yesterday, because, I mean, this incredible lottery win for the Edmonton Oilers, but where are you going to get that defenseman? And as he said, you absolutely do not get those defensemen. So you really look at it, here's your chance. Okay, you got the number one overall, and then you could almost do like the New Orleans Saints did with Ricky Williams. Trade all the picks.
Yes.
We'll go home. We'll move 16 and 33, and we'll pack up after four and take our stud forward, our stud defenseman, and just sit back and watch in the stands and have a margarita.
The opposite of the Herschel Walker deal, which built a champion in Dallas and New Orleans. That one didn't quite work out. Mitch Marner is on the phone with us now. The center from London, who is, I imagine, well, I won't put words in your mouth, Mitch. First of all, welcome. But are the nerves starting to ramp up, or is more excitement? How would you describe it on this day?
I think it's a bit of both. It's hard to, put into words. Finally, all coming down to, two or three days. And, you worked all year to have this moment. And, I know it's a little bit of both for me personally. I'm excited and nervous. And, it's going to be a fun time. After it happens for sure, and to see where you end up is, it's a thrill.
Now, are you really able to sit and chill and wait for the call, or do you find, whether it's with your family or whatever, that you really try to analyze the minutiae, that you try to play this mug's game of, I mean, it's so many different type of destinations. If it's a Phoenix on one hand, the big city in Toronto on another hand, are you sick of people based? They're not sick, but all the time, I would imagine, that's the topic du jour.
Yeah, it's obviously a bit of both, but, obviously you look into, where you think you're going to go and who you talk to and stuff like that, but, it's a draft day, anything can happen, any trades can happen, you can be told you go into this team and that team trades their pick and you go into a different team, so, you got to keep your options open at all time, and, you can't hope for one team to draft because anything can happen on that day, and, you got to be happy anywhere you go.
How many teams have you spoken to?
The combine, I spoke to 18.
Whoa, wow. Anything interesting out of that without naming names or teams? And what was the most interesting discussion you might have had?
Everyone was pretty good. No one was too hard on me. It wasn't too many weird questions, surprisingly. I thought there was going to be a lot more than, what I got asked. But
what was the weirdest?
It's probably, if your mom was sitting in that chair, what she'd say about you. It's probably the weirdest one I got. So it was pretty easy to answer.
People, about winning organizations, obviously in Toronto, that's a big reason Mike Babcock was signed as the coach there. When you look and all you've experienced really is that kind of organization in junior, what is it? What is it about that besides the caliber of the players? What are the intangibles that make it such a winning environment?
I think there's so many things. I think it goes from the management down. Everyone's willing to put work in. And I think if you're willing to do your best, I think, no matter – how skilled you are, your team can win, and that's I know that's the goal.
Not everybody has had a chance to see you play, or very often necessarily. Describe yourself as a player, Mitch, and is there someone in the NHL that you patterned yourself after?
I try and pattern myself after Patrick Kane. Obviously he's a special player, and I try and keep my feet moving at all times, no matter where I am, and I always keep my head up looking for plays to make when there is kind of no play to make, and I like to have the puck on my stick, and I like to control the play and control the pace of the game, and that's kind of my game, and it's how I played my whole life.
That's interesting for me, for those of us that never got to play at a high level of sports like this. For you, now you're 2 days away from the draft, and you know you're going to be, you know, at the very least 6 or 7 pick, probably higher than that. When did you first know? At what age? Without you know, you can be, don't be modest is what I'm saying. When did you first realize that you had a chance to make this a professional career?
You know, my whole time growing up, my whole life, you know, all I wanted to do was be an NHL player and win a, you know, Stanley Cup. And, you know, I think it's starting to, you know, kind of kick in, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, you know, when I got drafted to London, that, you know, this dream could, you know, potentially become a reality if I put in the work. And, you know, being drafted to London is pretty special. You know, the situation I got put in my first year was, you know, is something that a 16 or 17-year-old kid doesn't usually get. And, you know, since that moment, you know, I've never taken anything for granted, and, you know, I'm working for everything, and I'm, you know, always trying to get better and stronger and faster. And, you know, one day, obviously, I want to lift that cup over my head.
Our producer, Matt Brown, was saying your guys are going to take batting practice, I guess, in a few minutes' time. And he's mentioning a couple of years ago, Nail Yakupov ran from home to second. He didn't have a lot of baseball experience that way. So I'm curious, as a ball player, what you're like, and maybe who are some of the guys that might get the best cuts out of it?
You know, I never played baseball really too much, but I played with some buddies of mine, and, you know, we just, you know, hitting the ball, nothing too crazy and stuff like that. But I don't think I'll be, you know, nothing crazy at baseball. I know how to run the bases at least. You know, I'm hoping for at least one to, you know, go outfield, but I guess I'll see what happens. And, you know, it'll be a fun experience to all of us. You know, we're all of us starting to get to know each other a lot better, and, you know, we're joking around with each other more, and, you know, I think it's going to be a fun time for all of us.
Do you feel you're NHL ready for next season, Mitch, or do you still have some work ahead of you?
You know, I think you always have work ahead of you. I don't think, you know, even when you're in the NHL, you still got to work, and, you know, that's the goal for me, is to keep working and keep getting better and stronger. And, you know, whatever team drafts me, it's up to them to make that decision, but obviously I'm going to try and, you know, make it hard on them and, you know, try and do whatever it takes to stay in the NHL. But, you know, if I got sent back and get sent back to an organization that's, you know, first class and that's practically like an NHL organization. So, you know, it's a win-win anyway. And obviously the goal in mind is to play in the NHL next year. But, you know, I have options open, and, you know, I'll never stop working.
Who's going to be there at the draft with you?
I obviously have my mom, dad, brother. I think there's about 30 other people coming with us.
Wow.
A lot of family members. So it's going to be an exciting time for us.
All right. Well, we wish you the best of luck. It is an exciting time for all you guys, and I know the nerves will ramp up, but enjoy it as much as you can, your last 48 hours as, I guess, technically an amateur hockey player. Thanks for joining us, Mitch.
Thank you for having me.
It's Mitch Marner of the London Knights, and the playoff stock or playoff run for him, as short as it was as a team, 16 points in those 7 playoff games, didn't hurt his stock at all. He's one of those names that we obviously heard Eichel and McDavid, you know, heard them for a couple of years now, but Marner's one of those ones that kind of,
yeah.
And we talked yesterday about Owen Nolan late in the draft, where he ended up being number one. Mitch won't go that high, but suddenly he's a guy that people really want to talk about.
Well, and with those great teams, I mean, you know, he mentioned Patrick Kane and, you know, Rick Nash. I mean, they become great players in the NHL as well, but just about other guys like, you know, Sam Gagne being a little bit later to develop than that. And that's another angle you try to figure out as a scout as well, compared to someone who's on a team that's struggling. And, you know, that's part of it. He benefited from being on a great team, play more games, getting the profile, and deservedly so. But also you try to weigh about it that, okay, how much was it the team and how much was it him?
Well, I guess the other concern will be the size.
Yeah.
That he does have to bulk up to some degree, but I mean, we've seen Patrick Kane get by without not being a big man, just as long as he can move and, as he says, keep his feet moving. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands.
Damian Cox has him slated in his mock draft at number 5, and obviously with no teams attached, because we don't know who's going to pick then if there are deals made, but that's where Mitch Marner will likely fall. And it, you know, the two defensemen after the big two or what, and then you get into the likes of Strome, Marner, who's going to go next to the forwards.
I'm trying to remember the size of Rico Fatta. You know, but that he was picked around that, wasn't he? 6th overall.
Yeah.
You know, just a real popular player in London and that. And just, yeah. So it's it's an unfair rap. And certainly nowadays, I mean, back in the 70s or back when it was the Broad Street Bullies days about size and that mattering or toughness mattering, whatever it may be.
And for a long time, that held over into the 80s. Guys like Ronning and Ray Ferraro, who were big numbers in junior that didn't, they got a look and long careers, but meaning they weren't, the numbers that they put up didn't translate to what they should have in the
then
draft.
Then you see Johnny Hockey in Calgary, and you see him scoring three goals to beat your team in the third period.
Absolutely.
So it's, that's what the scouts get paid for.
The names will change.
Yeah, the size maybe isn't as big a factor anymore. Speed is certainly a huge factor, and you know they're going to vote today on whether or not there's 3-on-3 in overtime as opposed to 4-on-4. And you know, one of our managing editors was mentioning off there, he says, I wonder if that plays into the hands of teams looking at more skilled
that
guys on
point,
your roster, the faster player, the speedy guy with the good hands who can play in that extra 5 minutes, almost a specialist, if you will.
It's so
true. It may open that door.
The amount, how close it is, again, this year with the parity, those extra points that you pick up in that overtime.
Yeah.
And I was going to say the same thing with the 3-on-3. It looks like it should be a slam dunk, right? The GMs or the Board of Governors should... I mean, who knows? But the players, that's what they want.
I think if it gets that far, they typically push it through. If everybody else, the players are on side and the managers are on side, then I don't think we don't often see pushback from the governors on hockey issues per se.
And straight to 3-on-3, those are the listening that are tuning because I know people thought maybe 4-on-4, then to 3-on-3, but it's straight to 3-on-3.
Yeah, the AHL went with, what was it, 4 minutes of 4-on-4 and then 3 minutes of 3-on-3. But the players have zero interest in going beyond 5 minutes. And, you know, it may sound like it's not a big deal to play those extra minutes, but over the course of the season with travel, and when you think that it's typically your best players who are on all the time in those overtimes, it does add up after a while. And I just don't know about the 3-on-3. Is 4-on-4 good enough? The 3-on-3, you talk about the shootout being a gimmick. 3-on-3 feels like a gimmick.
It does, because I love the 4-on-4. I feel like, and I know the players don't want to go longer, but I always felt if they just went a minute or two longer, there'd be no shootouts because there's so many chances. I mean, it's back and forth, and it just feels like, we always talk about the hockey of our youth, but I mean, you know, the before everything got bogged down.
Well, there's the mixed message too: is we love the shootout, but we don't want it too often.
Don't want it all the time. We want it to be a special occasion.
You know, there's one I know they won't do in the NHL, but I don't know if you've ever been to a hockey tournament where they, you know, because it's always ice time related.
Yeah.
So they had 4-on-4 for 4 minutes, 3-on-3 for 2 minutes. 3-on-3 minutes, 2-on-2 for 2 minutes, and they did 1-on-1 for a minute. And you know, it was one of those quad things in Niagara Falls, New York. So everyone started coming over from all the rinks just out of curiosity
to
see it. And it actually went through the whole cycle, and then they started 4-on-4 again. Like they did do the 1-on-1. It was just bizarre to watch. And then someone scored the second time around 4-on-4.
I have my my one sob story in hockey. I was a goalie, and we got to the Lower Mainland Championship in BC, and the same thing, they were running out of rink. And I believe we did the tracing back that it was Cam Neely's team because he and I are the same age and it was Maple Ridge that we played and just figured it probably was. Anyway, they overtime, nobody scored. So they said, we're going to have another 5 minute overtime period with no goalies. You just have to be inside the blue line to score. You couldn't shoot from the other end. So that's how we decided a championship because the next team is coming on. So no goalies. So
took the heat off the goalies anyway.
Well, so you don't have that nightmare.
It was a magical run, Bradley.
Yes, and it ended there. But it's strange. But it's part and parcel. When you've got ice time issues, you can't just, people are waiting and to play. I mean,
so would you just leave it at 4-on-4?
Well, I don't mind the 3-on-3. No. I don't mind it. I think I agree with the thing more non-shootout results. I like.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't dislike the shootout, but the novelty's kind of worn us thing. I know kids still tend to like it. That's what you do all the time. Just like, you know, we liked the show Showdown, right? Because it was basically penalty shots all those years ago.
Yeah, and then the team showdown with the 3-on-3, which they're talking about doing perhaps at the All-Star Game, which people love. And they did a few years ago. Was it like on a sound stage here or something like that?
That Showdown show?
Mike Johnson. No, the later one. When
they
did the
later
3-on-3 tournament thing.
Yeah.
I think
it
was kind of like a fake. Anyway, that's what Mike Johnson said. The last thing he won in hockey was the 3-on-3. Cujo was his goaltender. We'll come back and talk much more about the big names that are going to be out there, either via trade or right now. Anyway, Matt Beleski as an unrestricted free agent, whether or not that holds before July 1st, the Ducks may circle back. We'll talk about that with Gord Celek and Scott Morrison, Hockey Central, at noon after this.
Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Back on Hockey Central at noon with Scott Morrison and Gord Stellick. I'm Brad Fay. As we close in on the draft, waiting for the Board of Governors meetings to give the old stamp to 3-on-3, which looks like it's going to happen in overtime, straight to 3-on-3 for 5 minutes. The players didn't want the extra few minutes, 4-on-4 and 3-on-3, don't want to play any longer. We all want to have less shootouts, not saying all, but speaking for many of us, I think. So 3-on-3 will be fun to try. As you said, Scott, maybe it'll be a little bit gimmicky, who knows. We talked earlier about how exciting it is around this draft because of the big names out there on the trade market.
Well, just the other thing that they're voting on too is a coach's challenge.
Coach's challenge, yes.
For offsides and goalie.
Offsides and then crossing the goal line, I think, too, is what Shanny was saying yesterday.
Yeah, and goaltender interference.
Yes. It's good that they can have a review for crossing the goal line. That's kind of the key. It's like when the refs make the we have no goal. The puck did not cross the goal line. You could announce that every time if they had to. But we talked about the excitement around the draft because of the people that are available via trade as much as anything, even though there is great intrigue beyond the first two. Before that, Matt Beleski heading to free agency, at least for now. Do you think that that's a done deal in that sense, or do you think the Ducks will come back around and try to sweeten the offer just a little bit?
I think it's a done deal. That's not saying the Ducks don't have interest in him. I just think your timing's great, much like Mike Babcock's was for a coach. And yesterday I mentioned a name like Ryan Malone, right? I mentioned him as a guy that Tampa went after big from Pittsburgh before and, you know, didn't really pan out for him down there for a lot of reasons. But, Beleski being kind of the journeyman type gets a chance to play on the big line. And he'll get a chance. It's kind of to me, Scott, I don't know, it's kind of a David Clarkson comparable in some ways, like just that kind of player that was, sure. It was a certain niche.
Yeah, no.
And then elevated it goal-wise. And it's still a very, you know.
Timing again.
Yeah, and Clarkson's still a very solid NHL player, but he was never the star. And he never even really pretended to be the star. He got the star money because of the stats for, you know, one season in particular or two.
And a particular need for a team, right?
And Beleski's a little bit of that.
Yep.
Yeah, I think in the case of Clarkson, that I don't think anybody expected him to be a top six guy or put up those types of numbers, but because of the number on the paycheck, it was just an incredible weight that he had to carry, and everybody judged him by that number instead of judging him on being the type of player that he had to be effective and accepting that. And I agree, Gord. I think, you know, Beleski could fall into that. And the interesting evaluation you have to make as a manager is how much was him and how much was the circumstance of who he was playing with, those players elevating his game. So, I mean, his timing was impeccable. There's no question about that. And I think ultimately he's going to cash in. But, again, he could be one that gets judged by the wrong number, and it's the one that's on the paycheck.
You know, it's and I'm trying to think. I don't know if there is a comparable because it seems like everyone's learned their lesson. But, you know, the year the Buffalo Sabres, with a new owner, went from always trying to get to the floor of the salary cap to all of a sudden just Christian Ehrhoff, come on down. Yeah. Robin Regier will flip a trade, come on down. You know, just
Leno as well.
Philly Leno, like anybody that just happened to be out there.
Yeah.
Right? And Florida did that. I mean,
they had to get to the floor.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And Dale Tallon said that. And he really probably, you know, whether it's Ed Jovanovski, all those guys, that he probably had to give them an extra year that they get somewhere else and probably a million more per season at that time to get them to come to the Florida Panthers. So three or four guys cashed in there. So I'm trying to think. I don't think of a team quite like that that's got an owner that's either like in Buffalo that's saying, hey, we're gonna spend to the max and show what we're doing, or somebody that was as desperate as Florida was a few years ago to get to the salary cap floor.
Yeah, and interesting when you mentioned with Clarkson with the money carrying that tag around, where he used to be able to say, as you know, to fans, why would you care? It's not your money. You know, whatever. Judge him on his play, but now with the salary cap, it comes into play. We're always taking up that big chunk of it. How about the goalie situation? I think this is exciting as well, with especially with Canadian teams involved, Eddie Lack, Robin Lehner, Cam Talbot, who had the run in. And it's even Dubnyk with Minnesota. We can talk about any of those because it's always the beware factor, right? Goalies that have been signed after one brief run and everybody gets excited and it never quite works out that way. So which of those stories are most intriguing to you?
Well, and you go back a couple of years and just even Jonathan Bernier being the answer for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So that was, you know, another one about a guy, a valued member of a Stanley Cup championship team, but the number two goalie, and still what could he do at the number one level?
Yeah, and last year with Schneider going for a high first-round pick, it sort of, I don't want to say set the precedent, but we saw it like a trade, an impact trade involving a goaltender, because it doesn't happen as much. And
different in the sense that all these guys are backups, you know, have been backups. Eddie Lack got a little more time, and obviously Dubnyk with is his individual thing. But Schneider was kind of a 1-1A situation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no real Ryan Millers. Am I missing one? Like last year, Ryan Miller as a free agent was sort of in Vancouver. Always had that question, and we're able to get him a decent term, which is huge. So,
and that's why Lack likely is on the way.
But I'm just finding, when you mentioned Cam Talbot, obviously it behooves a team like the New York Rangers to talk him up. Mm-hmm. Like they're talking about getting Edmonton's 16th overall pick being a price. Like, wow. I can see why they're trying to talk it up.
Yeah,
I mean, you always are talking up your backup goaltender to try. Well, Ben Bishop was a good case about one moving around and was worth it. But I don't know if there's a blockbuster, Scott, involving a goaltender in the offing.
Well, and I guess the risk, I mean, you got to Talbot. When he came in, when Lundqvist got hurt,
that kind of kickstarted their season.
Well, it did, but he was still giving up 3 or 4 goals a night when he first started, and then got progressively better as time marched on, and had a fabulous record for the Rangers. And they really got on a roll. But is that body of work big enough? Are you rolling the dice a little bit?
Absolutely.
If you're bringing him into an Edmonton situation, for instance, and anointing him as your number one, is he ready for that? And how much was the team, and how much is the goalie, and how much is the combination of both? So, and I think it's similar with a Leonard, if you were to go down that route. Eddie Lack would be similar.
Yep.
I think the evaluation process is going to be a little bit edgy.
Well, way it ended for Lack, for the Canucks, in terms of what these were, if he hadn't played in the playoffs, if Miller had come back 10 days earlier and Lack had that nice run of keeping them afloat, the value would be a lot better than the playoffs. There was some, and so was Miller. They're both Canuck goalies were a little bit shaky, but Lack suddenly, maybe the value, the timing is off a little bit because they saw him under the pressure and he didn't.
And if you're Minnesota, do you have to get Dubnyk done
somehow?
I don't know what the price point is. I mean, obviously you got to worry about your cap and your salaries, but boy, oh boy, how do you walk away from that?
But you also, just by mentioning the number there's quantity. So if you're looking, and Calgary to me is another team that they have to figure out their goaltending too. I mean, you mentioned Edmonton, and Calgary had a great run, obviously one of the surprise teams. And if teams like Colorado and Dallas get back on track, I mean, you're going to have a problem just making the playoffs next year.
Yep.
So, you know, that's another one that I think has to be looking at what they want to tweak. Are they interested in one of those guys? It's I think everybody wishes a Tuukka Rask was there, like the Leafs basically gave them for Andrew Raycroft. I mean, that you know, again, going back a bit, but that's kind of one where
it lands in your lap.
Yeah. A prospect like that landing in your lap, it doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, you talked about Calgary with the goaltending, and the obvious thing, and this is more from a fan's point of view, is right away Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf. You think, well, Brian Burke in Calgary, even if he's not pulling the strings, is there any chance, Scott, that either of those is talked seriously about from the Leafs to Calgary? There's a chance. I know there's a chance.
I guess anything's possible. You know, I think, given Calgary's defense, and Dion would probably fit in there nicely.
Be a nice number three.
But is the price point a little too high for where he would slot in there when you think of Giordano and the depth that they've got on that blue line? So maybe he's not the fit there because of the price point, although he'd probably be, as I say, that would be the best fit for him in terms of where he'd fall on the roster, or on the depth chart, rather. And Kessel, you know, a guy, 35, 40 goals. I think one thing you have to measure with him is when does he score the majority of his goals? How many of them are key goals in games? How many come in blowout-type games? That sort of thing. I'd want to have that analytics before I went down the road of acquiring him. But at the end of it, 40 goals, 35 goals, they're hard to find.
And obviously a score, because people say, oh, you know, Kessel, he wouldn't want to go to a Canadian city. I don't know if the spotlight in Calgary is the same as being in Toronto. They're Canadian fans, and they're definitely going to be on it. But I don't think there'd be a weird Kessel vibe like there is now in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been interesting that here's a guy that doesn't want to have anything to do with the spotlight, and yet is embraced playing where the spotlight shines the brightest. I mean, he you know, gladly came to Toronto when he left Boston. You know, it was one of his picks, and now he's got a situation where he can, you know, was I what is it, the only
asked to offer 8 or 10.
8 teams, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think any Canadian-based team would be one of them. Not because of the pressure. I just think I still think Florida, for example.
I think that's the best fit.
Yeah, I don't know whether how much he may be interested or not, but I'm just, you know, wow. That is a team that's just ripe to turn the corner.
Yep.
And this guy's
starving for goals.
Yeah, and this guy's contract is it's not a bad contract. It's a big one. Where Dion's contract is a bit of a millstone around the neck. That's one because for a number 3D. But then you look what Anton Stralman got, you know, to sign in Tampa and, you know, that kind of thing. So can Dion fill that kind of role being a three or a number two B or whatever it may be. But, when you're another general manager, you want to go and hunt where somebody is, had a terrible time. You know, like this is bargain basement. This is Filene's basement here.
Yeah.
As far as anybody goes in Toronto.
People think that, yeah, they just want to get out from under the contract. So you get them for anything. And that's what was going on with Roberto Luongo for all that time. And they finally were able to pull the trigger on a deal. And Patrick Sharp to me is the biggest name. I know for Canadian fans and Toronto fans, the Kessel Phaneuf, what happens there, but Patrick Sharp's a guy, and the first thing that came to mind for me, and again, these are not, you know, I'm not a general manager. I don't have any. I'm just saying right away Edmonton came to mind. You just feel like what a perfect guy to play with those kids. They have so many assets, whether Chicago would want their 16th pick. I don't know for Patrick Sharp, but I just feel like get some guy with some winning experience internationally, 3 Stanley Cups on a line with a couple of those kids in Edmonton and everything would magnify.
Well, I was just going to say, just before we close the door on that Leaf situation, is that as much as they want to move on, more than likely with both those players, they still have to make a quote-unquote hockey deal of some sort. It can't just be a cash dump, I don't think. They have to find a way to parlay them into future assets, whether it's that you got to get a first pick out of it and maybe a good prospect to bring into your organization, because you've got to get something in the system to develop, because if you just give them away, those are huge assets that have a value.
Yeah. Well, and if you just get a couple of guys that are bidding, then if it's Kyle Dubas or Brendan Shanahan, whomever's making the decision, that's going to be the art of the deal, trying to talk it up a little bit that way. So the Edmonton angle, I look a little bit like what David Boland did 2 years ago for Toronto, if he'd remained healthy. But yes, that kind of thing. I mean, Edmonton, how many years ago was it they brought Ryan Smith back?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. There haven't been a lot of them, but I know they've done it once or twice, just saying, yeah, we've got – you look what Colorado did. You know, bringing guys like Aginla and bringing some veterans this year to go with a strong young team, and they actually took a step backwards. So in Edmonton, there's no question, like, you know, Patrick Sharp for maybe the short term would be that kind of guy. And, you know, it's funny to think how right now, contract-wise, Connor McDavid's a bargain.
Yes.
Like, he's going to be a bargain for 3 years. You got those
3 free years, so to speak. So why not spend it what he's going to make collectively? You can get him and Patrick Sharp for the first –
so we really have Edmonton moving that number 16.
Well, I think I'd be disappointed as an Edmonton fan. There's got to be excitement now, but you've waited a long time. Yes, they're going to be good if everything works out, but I think you'd be disappointed if you didn't make some kind of stride now. And I know we had Speck on yesterday, and he says just everything's changed with the management group and the coaching staff. Everything feels that much better, and a goaltender is a key part of it.
Because the other question like with number 16 is you could still get a defenseman with that pick and probably get a pretty good one. You're not going to get the number one guy.
No.
Maybe not the number two guy, but you're still going to get a good defenseman in that spot.
And you build the team with the idea that you can be competitive, but you'll be championship contender when Connor McDavid arrives at that level in 2 or 3 years, if not sooner. It's sort of you build from there. It's they're in a great position now.
Well, that's good. The key question is going to be with Edmonton. And where obviously there's other... Peter Chiarelli's got other roster moves that he has to make. They got to address the goaltending situation, make the defense better, whether it's through, obviously start through the draft probably and what else you can pick up. But what are the and McDavid comes in, so what all of a sudden are the expectations for that team? Does it have to be a playoff team?
Oh, God, yes. Yes.
Right away.
Well, you
have to want it to be. Yeah.
It's got to be. I think that's what, I go back to it. I think that's where Tim Murray was so exasperated. It wasn't that he didn't get it in Buffalo.
Yeah,
it's just like that Edmonton.
How many chances?
They've been there, 3-4 times that way. But I, I go back to, you know,
if the playoffs are the expectation, then you got to move the 16th.
Yeah. Well, and I, again, having Hanifin on the other day chatting with the young defenseman, and then after that, I did the article. It's on sportsnet.ca just about, you know, just looking. I was looking at it from a Maple Leaf point of view, but just the fourth overall pick saying, okay, if Strome goes third and you get a chance to pick the number one ranked defenseman in the draft, whoever they may rank number one, or the number four forward. Mm-hmm. And I looked previous drafts, who was the number one D and who was the number the fourth forward that was picked. And there was no question. I mean, Eric Ekblad, Victor Hedman, Drew Doughty, I mean, the Seth Jones, the list went on and on and on. So if I'm the Edmonton Oilers, I'm thinking now that we won the lottery. Now we got to do some work and get that. We got to get that. If we can get that blue chip D, we can do what Brian Burke did with the two Sedins, you know, put his signature with the Vancouver Canucks all those years. I just think the quantity is so far behind the need for quality. If you can get that stud this way and then off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're not done just sitting on the fact they won the lottery, got number one. They want to go up there, get one and three, and you know.
It's a huge splash.
It would be, yeah.
And when you think of what they've done off the ice, too, from Bob Nicholson to Peter Chiarelli.
Feels different, doesn't it?
The change in the coaching as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you hit the big home run with McDavid. If you could ever get that number three, I mean, it'd be an amazing run.
Yeah. What about McDavid? Talk about maturity. Talk about how much you enjoyed talking to Hanifin and Connor McDavid. Has it, the guy's been under the spotlight for that long? What numbers do we expect? You know, I always remember Mario Lemieux's rookie year, he had 100 points exactly. I believe 1940. You know, what's the number of expectation for a guy? Now, normally, first overall pick, if they come in and play at 18 years old, you say, if they give us 40 points, 45 points, you're happy. Could be a lot more than, you know, happy with that. What about Connor McDavid? What's a number that comes to mind for you that you would turn your head or you feel that he'll do?
The other number with Mario Lemieux was the Penguins did not make the playoffs five of his first six seasons.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't a cap world either back then as well. I think the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
In Edmonton, I just, because I mean, I like that
gonna
great
play
young
with some talent.
And I've always liked, and it's been baffling when they've shown their glimpses.
Yeah.
And you've just said, wow.
Like point a game as a rookie?
I'll give him a point a game.
Yeah.
Why not? That's not,
getting 90 points wins the scoring title.
Yeah,
well, you're going to give him 82?
He could be top.
Well, that's if he plays every game. I don't know. If he misses three, I'll give him 79.
Yeah. But you know, I think that's a high number.
Yeah.
Well, just given that 90 points wins a scoring title now, or thereabouts, that if that continues, then I think you have to maybe 60 is a really, really good start.
Yeah.
I don't know. 80 just feels high. If
the comparison, the
numbers don't go up.
We're still living in a democracy. Is that correct?
The immediate comparison is Sidney Crosby, who won the Hart Trophy in his second year and it wasn't that steady rise. It was get your feet wet and then. Mm-hmm. Boom, you become the best player in the National Hockey League in the second year, which is so if this guy is and everything we've seen would suggest, I think the one thing that's keeping people's expectations sort of tempered a little bit is because he wasn't quite healthy for the World Junior. And so he didn't dominate it built as it went, but he wasn't the stunning player on the ice that turned every head because he just came back from that hand. And that was the public that doesn't watch as much junior hockey and, you know, no Memorial Cup for him. It was like that was the one time they were going to see, and maybe it didn't, you know, the way the others had dominated in the past.
Yeah, I just, you know, and keep in mind, I was with an organization that rushed young guys and much to the detriment more often than not. And I have, Scott, like, I'm trying to be realistic because I get it. It's a quantum jump up there. But I just... His body of work, and you're right. I mean, he got hurt, and you know the expectations maybe a little bit out
then
there.
Then the playoffs, when you didn't watch him, you heard the numbers. It was night after night, right?
Yeah, just men against boys, which...
Mm. I'm not doubting his abilities, and that
just because
he'd be a great player. I just simply say the way the league has come down...
The leaders had 200, Gretzky, so
there's a lot of great players who aren't putting up those numbers. Yeah.
What's his plus-minus going to be, do you think?
Oh, God.
Well, if he gets 90 points, it'll be good.
If he gets a point a game, it's going to be in a pretty good... Pretty good spot.
Something like that.
Talk amongst yourself. I'm going to see if I can find this stat before we go
okay.
off Mario. So, what are we looking forward to?
I'm curious for the stat.
What are we looking forward to tomorrow? Two more shows left, gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to two more shows, the draft. I just like the surprise trade, the Sagan trade, the Bobby Ryan trade, the Richards and Carter trades that started a couple of years ago that weren't even discussed, and you get to react rather than predict, because this really is a true trade deadline as well. The other one's just getting rid of expiring contracts in March.
Yeah, so Mario Lemieux's 100 points, it wasn't even in the top 10 that year. So 205 Gretzky and Rick Middleton with 105 was 10th. So that's the difference of 100. 82, but you heard it here first. Scored 82 points.
That's 82.
We'll see both tomorrow. Hockey Central at noon.
Two more shows.
We are done. Flitch over to baseball. Enjoy it here on Sportsnet.